Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. A half century ago, nobody expected much of Sergio Leone's 1964 Italian Western, A Fistful of Dollars. Not even its young American star, Clint Eastwood, who saw the project as a European vacation from his American TV series, Rawhide. Today, we explore how its fiery success ignited the popularity of an entire genre known as spaghetti westerns. Joining us today are Bill Schaefer. He's director of KTWU. That's the public television station over in Topeka, who's presenting a program on this very subject tomorrow night at the Kansas City Public Library. Bill, nice to have you. Welcome.
A pleasure. Steve, glad to be here.
Thank you. And taking a break on his drive back from Hutchison is a screenwriter, UMKC film prof, and Up-to-Date's own DVD guru, Mitch Bryan. And Mitch, how are you?
I'm just great. I'm out here in the middle of the Flint Hills.
Well, appreciate you giving us a call. Thanks, buddy. So, Bill, what sparked your interest in spaghetti westerns?
I saw them when I was much, much younger, and I think it just was one of these things. They were so different from American westerns. There was something about them that was totally opposite John Wayne and any of the other performers who were making westerns at the time. I just thought, this is really cool. This is really different. I like this.
And I bet you saw a bunch of them at a certain place in Hutchison. It was called the Fox Theater.
I did.
Tell us about it.
And that was my dad's theater. He was the manager there for about 15 years, from 1950 to 65. And I basically grew up in that theater, and I loved it. I mean, you get free movies all the time. What can you not like about this? It was a terrific place to be. It's an old Art Deco style theater. Occasionally, the movies we would see there would have some of that style in them, so you would feel as if you were watching the movies extend out into the auditorium. And it was an incredible place to be.
Mitch Bryan, I gather you have a connection to the old Fox Theater out in Hutchison as well. That's your stomping ground.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a lot of movies there, and I actually saw both A Fistful of Dollars and For a Few Dollars More on a double bill at the Airview Drive-In in Hutchinson, which is no longer there.
Yeah. Tell me about your relationship with the Fox, Mitch. I mean, you were there a lot, I gather, given your interest in movies.
I did. Yeah, I mean, just like Bill said, I mean, I feel like I grew up in that theater. I mean, it was a place where I went, every week, and I had this one seat that I always liked to sit in right before the aisle sort of breaks. And now that it's been restored, I've been back there a few times to see some movies there, and it's really thrilling.
Hey, Mitch, do you guys know each other, you and Bill?
No, I don't think so, actually.
No, I think we missed each other by a few years.
But I bet it would
take probably three sentences to find, 10 people in common that we know, though.
Yeah, I have to add to that, too, that Mitch, that seat was warmed for you by me. I know exactly where you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Bill, how in the world did the Europeans, in an era long before the Internet, all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, become interested in making films on a subject as arcane to them as the Wild Wild West?
That's a good question, because actually they were in love with the West. They loved the westerns of the American screen, of the American cinema. They loved films like Rio Grande and Stagecoach and a lot of the John Ford films. The Europeans, really like that era. They really find that fascinating. In fact, when they come here to visit, they're frequently shocked by the fact that we don't have wild Indians anymore. We don't have all these places occupied with stagecoaches and things. It's not like that. So they were really in love with it, and they wanted to make their own brand of these westerns. And
I was going to say, Sergio Leone got a little frustrated, though, with what he was seeing from the traditional American western, right?
Yes, exactly. And he was alone in that, I think, in a way, because a lot of the other films that you see coming out at that time from Italy, from Germany, from Spain, the westerns were pretty much trying to be very much like American Westerns. They mm-hmm. wanted to be a lot on the same lines. Sergio took it and went in a totally opposite direction.
He had an operatic kind of view yes. of the way to do a film, right?
Yes. And he wanted to shoot things in close-up. He wanted to shoot beautiful widescreen vistas. He wanted to contrast those. And he just, the music is a great step, too, because mm-hmm. the music of Ennio Morricone really makes those films. I mean, to talk of him as being a star, I would say, yes, he's 50 to 60% of the effect of those movies.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is that wild range of sound, whip cracks, bells, voices, choral voices, all sorts of things going on in the music. It just almost sounded like a symphony in itself.
Mitch, Brian, we're talking about a guy named Sergio Leone here who directed and maybe produced some of these spaghetti westerns. Spaghetti westerns didn't win a lot of Oscars. So what is Sergio Leone's sort of place in the pantheon of American film directors?
Well, I think that he's, of course, now he's admired and he's imitated because he just brought this amazing formulaic style, this really, formulist style, where everything, these compositions were just beautifully put together. You had these wide shots with men stacked within the frame to create depth and space. And he reinvented the Western. In fact, in some ways, he was probably the first director after John Ford that really kind of created his own visual way of seeing the West. And like Bill said, the West that he envisioned was something that was kind of uncanny because, you had vistas and spaces and you had guys with cowboy hats and you had horses, but then you look at it and everything is just a little bit off. And for me, it took me years because I saw these as a 10-year-old kid to realize that the horses alone, because they are these Spanish and Arabian horses, which are shorter and taller, that alone made these movies look totally different.
Clint Eastwood was not the first choice of a star here, Bill. In fact, Sergio he went to Henry Fonda first, then Charles Bronson, and then James Coburn, and a whole bunch of others, and then finally he gets to Clint Eastwood. How would this film have been different if Henry Fonda had been the star, and why wasn't Clint the first choice?
Well, Clint wasn't that well known, really. He'd only been in he'd been a contract player, and he'd been in the Rawhide TV series up to this time.
Yeah.
And I just think, nobody really knew him at all that well. And he was really, when you look at him, he's more of like the clean shaven, nice looking young star
on
at
Rawhide.
The time.
Yeah.
On Rawhide, mm-hmm. yes. And so he really, maybe not fit the profile really, but he had a friend and a guy by the name of Ty Harden, who was another Western TV performer, who composed a list of his friends and the guys he would say, hey, check these guys out, because he wasn't really able to do it either. And he handed that off to Sergio Leone, and he looked down the list and he pulled out Clint Eastwood. I'm not sure why, but he pulled out Clint Eastwood and he asked him and he gave him an offer and he said yes, and off they went. So,
Mitch, if Henry Fonda had done this film, how would it have been different?
I guess it depends on which Henry Fonda would do the film, because if you look at Once Upon a Time in the West, where he plays the bad guy, mm-hmm. and he's silent and menacing and those piercing blue eyes, I don't know. I mean, he certainly wouldn't have brought the youth and the kind of devil-may-care swagger that Eastwood brings to it. And I think it's really interesting when you think about that attitude that Eastwood brings to those pictures and the same attitude that Sean Connery brings to James Bond around the same time.
Yeah.
And it was something that was very iconoclastic and confident and cocky and masculine,
Yeah. Well, I think it's fair to point out that at this point in Eastwood's career, he was eager to be something very different than just being the white hat. Let's listen to him from this film, A Fistful of Dollars, as he confronts some bad guys who have shot his mule, and Eastwood, his character at least, wants an apology.
Adios, amigo. Listen, stranger. Did you get the idea? We don't like to see bad boys like you in town. Go get your mule. You let him get away from you?
You see, that's what I want to talk to you about. He's feeling real bad.
Huh?
My mule. You see, he got all riled up when you went and fired those shots at his feet.
Hey, you making some kind of joke?
No. You see, I understand you men were just playing around, but the mule, he just doesn't get it. Of course, if you were to all apologize. it's nice you laughing? You see, my mule don't like people laughing. It's the crazy idea you're laughing at him. Now, if you apologize, like I know you're going to, I might convince him that you really didn't mean it.
That's our boy. Mitch Bryan, how was Clint Eastwood received in these movies? What did critics say about him in this very different role he was playing than what he'd been doing in Rawhide?
I don't think at first critics quite knew what to make of these movies and what to make of him, you know? But the audiences loved these pictures.
Because why, Mitch? Why?
I think they liked them because they were seeing so many things that they'd never seen in the Western before, whether they were consciously registering that or not. But just little things like the fact that there was a rule that you couldn't show the gun firing and the bullet hitting the guy in the same frame, you know. So these films all felt really fresh. And then you had this hero who was this, you know, who was this killer. He was the anti-hero. Very different than, you know, John Wayne or Gary Cooper.
Yeah.
And so I think that young people really responded to that. You know, it's like, this isn't my dad's Western. This is, you know, this is something for me that's fresh and that's new.
Bill, how did this film hit you when you saw it the first time?
I have to take the fifth on that one, Steve, because I didn't see it till after I saw two of the other films that Eastwood was in, and frankly, it was almost a disappointment by that time because it really wasn't, you know, I guess it wasn't as fresh for me. I'd seen it done before, so to speak.
These films were made where, Bill?
Oh, they were shot in Spain. Portions were shot in the Cinecittà studios in Italy. And, you know, that was the interiors and things like that. But mostly that was it. They were all shot out in Spain. And they were co-productions. They were produced by this one especially. Fistful is one of the most important because it had an Italian production company, a German production company, a Spanish production company all working on it.
How did all that work together? How did the language barrier, I'm sure, was fairly significant at
they
times.
Had numerous interpreters for every person there.
Numerous, I'm sure.
I'm very serious about that.
Including Eastwood. Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Eastwood had an interpreter, you know, who helped him understand Leone. And the Spaniards provided a couple of Spanish actors. The Germans provided a couple of German actors. There were several Italian actors. So think of this. The Italians are all speaking Italian on screen. The Germans are speaking German on screen. The Spanish are speaking Spanish on screen. And then here's Eastwood. The only guy who's speaking English is speaking English.
Yeah.
So the actual sound that they were recording at the time was no sound. They didn't record any sound at all. They just basically dubbed everything afterwards.
They dubbed everything in?
Everything afterwards, yes. They did sometimes take what is called a dub track, and they would put one microphone on the set area where they were shooting and record it just for reference, just so they could know, you know, who said what and so forth. And that usually got lost. Eastwood complained that was one of the major problems in those films is they would lose that track. They would lose it somewhere. And he would make sure that his script was always doctored. With whenever he made a change, he would write down what he said because he knew going back into the dubbing studio that he would not have that in his head. And he would have to reference that all the time. And he said more times than one, somebody would go, you know, the Italian actor would go, I don't know what this guy's saying. And they would go, hey, we don't know what he's saying either. So just make up something and get close. And they try it.
So. Mitch, hearing Bill describe that, it's something of a miracle in my mind that these films came out the way they did. Am I right? As well as they did,
yes.
Mitch?
Yes.
Well, yes and no, because that was the way that all Italian films were made at that time.
Huh.
That's why they were able to make Fellini, all of his films are dubbed. All these classic Italian movies that we think of from the early 60s and late 50s were almost all entirely redubbed afterwards. It was how they could shoot so cheaply and how quick and so quickly because they didn't have to record sound. So it was kind of a convention. It was kind of accepted. And since they were made for international audiences, every country went ahead and dubbed them anyway because nobody really wanted to read subtitles at that point.
Huh. So ultimately, Mitch, then, what were the positives and the negatives of making films about the American West in a foreign country?
Well, I think what happens is because of those slight differences and that lack of understanding, there's all sorts of new ideas and concepts get brought into these films. And I think they almost immediately become mythic or fantasy. So it's a different kind of Western. And the anachronisms in these movies, there's a machine gun in Fistful of Dollars. Well, there weren't machine guns in the Old West. There might have been a Gatling gun. But it's a real modern machine gun. And there's one spaghetti Western where it's the Civil War, and I think they're wearing green and gray. It's not, they got the colors wrong. Mm-hmm. So it becomes this comic book representation, this pop art representation of the Western. And it's not to everybody's taste, but for those who want to go there, it becomes really, really special.
Hmm. Well, if our listeners are just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR, and we're talking this morning about the 50th anniversary of a seminal film, A Fistful of Dollars, the first of the old spaghetti westerns, Sergio Leone's film. It stars Clint Eastwood. We're visiting with Bill Schaefer, who's director of KTWU, the public TV station over in Topeka. He'll be speaking tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library for a talk titled A Fistful of Dollars at 50, The Impact of Spaghetti Westerns. Again, that's at 6:30 tomorrow evening at the Plaza Branch of the Kansas City Public Library. We're also visiting with Mitch Bryan, one of our DVD gurus, about this film. Our phone number here, if you want to join our conversation, 816-235-2888. Again, that's area code 816-235-2888. Bill, briefly, if you would, can you tell our listeners who may not be completely tuned in with A Fistful of Dollars, what was the plot? I know fairly complicated here, but was the plot?
It's simple. There's two rival gangs running one little small Mexican town. You know, one of them sells guns, one of them sells liquor. And
they're great people
Eastwood comes into the middle of this and decides, well, hey, it'd sure be a lot better if all these guys were gone and, you know, this little village could go on and exist on its own. So he kind of maneuvers things to make sure they, A, kill each other off, and B, he can kill off the last few and finish it out. And in the end, he rides away from a quiet little town. And that's the way it goes.
And Mitch, what's happening in the world at the time that made this movie so successful? I mean, we're just coming off a Kennedy assassination, and we're messing around with Vietnam. The Cold War is raging. Did all of that play into the success of this film?
All of those did, and the production codes would soon fall apart. And so this movie was kind of ahead of the curve in doing things that weren't allowed, which made the movie a little bit more notorious. Also, for anybody who was, you know, hip to foreign films, they saw this picture and realized that it was a remake of the Akira Kurosawa samurai movie, Yojimbo. They had just taken the plot and transported it into the Old West. And in fact, Kurosawa sued and famously said after the fact that he made more money off of the retribution he got back, the payment he got back for suing, than he ever made on Yojimbo, the original movie. But he also stole Yojimbo from a Dashiell Hammett book called Red Harvest. So there are many iterations of this story.
Mm-hmm. In fact, the film opens up in Italy in 64, Bill, if I understand right, where it was a huge hit. But it didn't open in this country until a couple of years later. Why not?
Well, part of that was that lawsuit. Part of that involved the lawsuit with Akira Kurosawa. You know, I think he had made some specifications about, you know, when they could release it and that sort of thing. And they released it in Japan, and he received all of the residuals from when it was shown in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the big things about, hey, that made a bunch of money, and he got it. So that worked out very well. But they didn't release them here until 1967, and they released them all in about a year's worth of time. And they used the tagline, it's the first motion picture of its kind, it won't be the last. Well, they knew that.
And they were already done.
They were already done. So they're all in the can by that time. And so they released each film, you know, kind of one right after the other. And each one got a little more successful than the last, the final one being The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, which became a gigantic hit. And, you know, suddenly all the films were re-released again and that sort of thing.
And Clint Eastwood, Bill, hasn't looked back since.
You know, he hasn't, and I shouldn't say not completely. I mean, he's taken a few moments to do some comments on the DVDs editions of these films.
Mm-hmm.
So he has gone back, you know, and he did go back and visit Leone many, many years later when he was dying, and they kind of, you know, remain friends at the end of his career.
So is Clint Eastwood, is he proud of these films, or is he a little bit ambivalent?
I think it's a two-way street, Steve. The first one, this one, he's not as excited about anymore because he didn't make very much money. He made $15,000, and that was it. You know, okay. He made a flat fee because he said going in, you know, usually these films, it might make it or it'll just completely, nobody will ever see it. And he says most of the time, nobody ever sees it. So that's what he was expecting. He figured this wouldn't do that well. And he took his flat fee and went away. When they made the sequels, he got a percentage of each one.
Oh, then he did very well with that.
He did very well with those. So he doesn't mind looking back at those.
That's how that works. Okay. Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls here. Go ahead, Mitch.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that after the fact, and he knew what he had, he very shrewdly made several films in America, like Hang 'Em High and Two Mules for Sister Sarah, that were totally following the spaghetti Western tone. And he had a much bigger stake in those pictures.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's go to some calls at 816-235-2888. Katie from the Lawrence area. Katie, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thank you so much. I just have a quick comment. We enjoyed, and it may have been a few years later, but not too many, another spaghetti Western, which was the Trinity movies, as opposed to the Trinity movies that we know now. Trinity was the name of the main character, a blue-eyed, sandy-haired guy, didn't look Italian at all, but it was an Italian Western, and he had the most tremendous slap-face gunplay, back-forth, really fast action in his movies. And I was just wondering if you'd like to make a comment about those.
Bill, you lit up when Katie mentioned those films. Yeah.
Those were the films that I think nobody thought would do that well, and they turned around and did great. It was a shot in the arm to the spaghetti Western genre. They came later, like 69 or 70, I think, in there somewhere, and they were just a huge hit in America. They didn't expect that to happen. Sergio Leone even produced a film called My Name is Nobody with that star. His name is Terence Hill. Right. And it was the same sort of thing. He just basically wanted to get in on that action.
Katie, thank you so much. I just wanted to share that.
Thanks, Katie. Hey, Mitch, Brian, Gabby writes us, and she wants to know, do any of your guests know where the term spaghetti Western comes from? Who first coined the term, and do we even know that?
I don't.
Well, it came because they were financed, made in Italy. I mean,
okay.
Spaghetti and not in Cinecittà.
Yeah. So spaghetti in Italy, and therefore you have a spaghetti Western, eh?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Bill?
Actually, at that time, before Fistful of Dollars, they were referred to as macaroni Westerns, which everybody hated in Italy. And I think when they changed it to spaghetti, they kind of softened up and they didn't mind that one so much. But macaroni just didn't work at all. So.
Back to some calls. James from Independence. James, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of A Fistful of Dollars, the Clint Eastwood film. Good morning.
Good morning, and I was going to tell them about that came from a samurai movie, story. But following that, there was another one called The Seven Samurai. Didn't they take the Magnificent Seven from that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they certainly did. Yes, that was.
How many of these Westerns have a samurai background? Do you know?
Actually, only three that I can think of right now. The Seven Samurai became The Magnificent Seven. The film Rashomon became The Outrage in the early 60s, and then this film was pulled from Yojimbo. Those are the main three I can recall. And I will say that during my presentation tomorrow night, I will have some comparison scenes between A Fistful of Dollars and Yojimbo. So,
Mitch, do you want to weigh in here, or you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and you know, the Western always would borrow these sort of classic stories. There's Anthony Mann made a picture called The Furies, which is dealing with the Greek tragedy, you know. So they were always finding places where they could borrow stories and transport them into the West.
James, thanks you for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's go to Tristan from Overland Park. Tristan, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Morning. Hi, I just wanted to just ask your guests if they had heard of the movie Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis and Christopher Walken, and just it's almost identical. I'm wondering if the influence from Fistful of Dollars, if that's where that came from. Like, it's basically Bruce Willis plays the same role as Clint Eastwood, except it's like the 1920s, 30s, two rival gangs in the town, same plot, same everything. And I'll take my comment, or I'll take my response.
Yeah,
here.
Tristan, Bill Schaefer's nodding his head. Yes.
Yes, that was, yeah, that was the more recent remake, shall we say, of the same story. And I think they probably stuck a little bit closer to Dashiell Hammett's Red Harvest for that one.
Yeah. Okay, again, our phone number, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. What other movie stars, you know, classic movie stars now, Mitch Bryan, got their start in the spaghetti western?
Got their start?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I know that, like, Charles Bronson went and made Once Upon a Time in the West, but I'm not sure whether anybody kind of came out of the gate the way that Eastwood did and then became a major American or international star. A lot of American actors would go to Italy and would work in these pictures because it was an easy way to make a buck and you could, you know, have a little vacation while you did it.
Yeah.
But I think he's particular and special in those terms.
You know, Bill, the spaghetti westerns, its popularity did eventually begin to fall. What caused that?
That's a good question, Steve. I think maybe... you know, it has to do with a lot of things with the whole Western genre. I think a lot of things kind of fell apart because, A, it was overexposed. You had too much of it on television. You had too much of it in the movies for a while. And people just got – I think they just got tired of it. I think
yeah.
It just kind of fell out of favor. And in that same breath, the spaghetti Westerns kind of lost their hold and went away as well.
Man, I could watch them all day. I see them now. I just can't take my eyes off the screen. Mitch, go ahead. Yeah.
And certainly 2 years ago when – Quentin Tarantino made, you know, Django Unchained, that was a very conscious nod toward the spaghetti westerns. He even used some more Coney tracks on his soundtrack, and the end title, he plays the theme from one of those Trinity movies.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is this great fondness for these movies, and I think the spaghetti western has morphed into other movies, and you see its influences all
yeah.
over the place, you know. So it's still alive, it's just kind of hidden under the surface.
Gene from Fairway, you're on Up to Date. Gene, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to comment, and someone touched on it, about the great departure that hero template was for Eastwood and how the movies of, say, earlier movies, way earlier, actually, Bud Bottiger, Anthony Mann, the hero was pure good, you know, all the way, and no humor in those movies, by the way, whereas the so-called spaghetti westerns, which was a derogatory term because they kind of hated the money going to Italy, but those westerns were humor, lots of laughs in them, and that was such a departure from the hero template. That's my comment. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, Gene, thank you very much. And the film budgets for these films, Bill, looked like what when they were being made? Was there much of a budget for these spaghetti westerns, or were they pretty cheaply made?
They were pretty cheaply made. I mean, the Eastwoods are a little different. I mean, the first one cost about $150,000 to $200,000, and that was a very low budget in those days. The second one was more like $600,000, and the third film, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, was over $1 million, which was a huge change for a spaghetti western, huge amount of change for a spaghetti
yeah.
western. So they were unusual in that way. Most of the others, I'd say, were still down in the $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 range, something like that.
We have a call now from John Tibbetts, one of Wapple Dean's longtime movie critics. John, how are you?
Hi, guys. Just fine.
Good. Go ahead, John.
Listen, I think it was Lee Van Cleef who stole the show, at least in those last two films.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a lot of us had never heard of Lee Van Cleef until we saw For a Few Dollars More. So I'd like to have some comments about him, and I'll get off the line.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yeah.
Thanks, John. Good to hear from you. Lee Van Cleef, yes, great character actor, great Western character actor from the 50s, who basically in the 60s just sort of was disappearing. He was hardly in any films at all, and Leone kind of searched him out
mm-hmm.
and found him for a role in the film For a Few Dollars More, in which he is really the second lead. He's a very important character, and it basically struck a huge chord, and he got asked to do numerous Italian westerns. He probably had more spaghetti western work than Eastwood would have had or anyone else at the time. He really made a lot of them right there in the 60s.
Yeah. Mitch, let's wrap up this segment. How is the western faring these days in movie theaters across the country? Are we seeing many of them, or where do we stand with the western?
Now, the western's in big trouble, as it always goes through these peaks and valleys, and other than television, Hell on Wheels, there's just not much out there. The appetite doesn't seem to be very strong, and Westerns get turned into modern. You know, there are some modern Westerns that get made occasionally, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. The good news for film people is that so many of these movies are now available, and we can see them. And I'd mention just quickly the other Sergio Corbucci, who made some extraordinary movies, particularly The Grand Silence, which all takes place in winter and snow. And he brought this very naturalistic vibe to it as opposed to the formalistic style. And so it's much rougher and looser, and they're terrific. And so that's the advantage. That's the good news, is there are lots of Westerns that can be sought out and found and watched, you know, at home.
Well, let's leave the spaghetti Western right there because we're out of time for this segment. But I want to, again, thank Bill Schaefer. You can see and hear him again tomorrow evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City Public Library on the Plaza. His talk is titled A Fistful of Dollars at 50. You can grab a seat by going to kclibrary.org. Bill, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
And Mitch Bryan, he'll be on the show later on this week, and he joined us again this morning via cell from the Flint Hills as he's driving home from Hutch. And enjoy the Flint Hills, buddy.